Welcome to the April 28th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service today is led by a guest speaker, Dr. Brandy Faulkner, and the title of her presentation is Spring Cleaning Time, Four Truths of Holistic Healing. The speaker is introduced by Worship Associate Victoria Taylor.
It is my great pleasure today to have the opportunity to introduce you to Dr. Brandy Faulkner. Dr. Faulkner is an activist and organizer focusing on racial and environmental justice. She is committed to cultivating community-based approaches to problem solving and serves several state and national organizations dedicated to social justice as well as social, political, and economic change. Dr. Faulkner is a multi-award-winning professor at Virginia Tech, is in the Department of Political Science, including the College of Liberal Arts and Human Sciences Teaching Excellence Award and its Diversity Award, and the Edward S. Diggs Scholar Award. She is the recipient of the prestigious Caring Hands Award, given by the National Big Brothers Big Sisters of America Foundation to community leaders across the nation engaged in exemplary youth development. Today she's going to be talking about spring cleaning, and I look forward to her presentation.
Good morning. Everybody okay? Yeah? Good. At least I brought the sunshine. Okay. So the reading that I'm going to do prior to speaking is from the Instructions of Ptahotep, one of many wisdom text that comes from ancient Egypt. And in maxim number 19, it reads as follows. If you want your conduct to be perfect, deliver yourself from every ill and combat against the greed of the heart. It is a grievous sickness without a cure, impossible to penetrate. It causes disaster among mothers and fathers, among brothers and sisters, and it separates husbands and wives. It is the root of all ills, a bundle of all hateful things, that man endures who correctly applies mayat and walks according to his stride. He will make it his will. The greedy of heart has no tomb. And from the epilogue, if you hear my sayings, all your plans will go forward. In their act of mayad lies their value. Their memory lingers on in the speech of men because of the accomplishment of their command. If every word is carried on, they will not perish in the land. That an advice be given for the good, so that the great will speak accordingly. It is teaching a man to speak to what comes after him. He who hears this becomes a master healer. It is good to speak of balance. We will live by it. So I would first like to thank you all for having me here today, and especially to Reverend Pam for inviting me to speak. I know her from many places in the community, as she is usually out and about doing a lot of social justice related work. And I was especially excited when she said that the theme was wholeness, because I really like talking about wholeness, and it's a concept that I study a lot in African philosophy. And so I wanted to just share with you today some of, I guess, the ideas that come from my culture about wholeness, and also some of the lessons that I've been able to learn when thinking about and studying this subject. And I've been smiling a lot lately because it's spring, finally. and we tend to associate spring with a time of renewal and rebirth and dedication to beginning anew, right? So the flowers bloom and the trees grow their leaves again, and everything just seems to be so full of life, and it's really a beautiful time to me. And then there's the spring cleaning, which I dread, usually, right? But the idea is that we clean up our things and make them look renewed and fresh and beautiful. We tidy up our homes so that we can actually enjoy the season that is to come. But when I think about spring cleaning, to me, even though I dread it, that's the easy part. But I also take springtime to think about wholeness a lot. And a lot of my spring cleaning is psychological cleaning, where I try to rebalance myself, my life, and get rid of the things I don't want anymore, the things that have held me back, the things that I no longer wish to be part of. And I look forward to it, but it's very difficult to think about what's not working psychologically for me. It's a time of a lot of reflection. How many of you like to reflect? Yeah, me too. It's a good process, right? But there are a lot of adjustments as well. So I think about what kinds of adjustments I would like to make. And I also think about commitment. What is it that I want to commit to as I move forward? And how can I become whole through those processes? It's a time for healing. And mentally, I always come out of the process feeling like I can keep going, right? Despite the challenges that we sometimes have, despite everything that's going on in the world, the mental spring cleaning really keeps me moving forward. So in African philosophy, there are five dimensions of our whole self. And I promise this isn't a lecture, though it's... Some habits are a little bit difficult to break. And I say African philosophy not because Africa is a monolith, but because we do see historically some common philosophies, some common spiritual tendencies and understandings that transcend the geographic divisions. And a lot of those things still exist. A lot of the practices, a lot of the ways of doing things are still very much a part of African culture. So the five dimensions of the self that I think about as I'm trying to figure out how to become whole is, number one, the physical self. And for African people, this is a very important concept, because it's all of the things that are associated with our physical presence on earth. Every task that we do, the way we take care of our bodies, what we eat, how we treat the environment, is all tied to our physical self. And then there's the mental self. Our consciousness, our levels of awareness, how we perceive the world and our place in it, who we are and where we are, and also where we must go. And then there's the social self, which I really enjoy. But the social self requires that we think about our relationships, how we interact with one another, how we care for each other, the time we spend together, what we build together. And then there's the tribal self, and that's our connection to our ancestors and to our history. The tie to all that has come before us is important. The concept of Sankofa, in order to move forward, we have to be willing to look back, see where we've come from, see where the mistakes were made so that we don't repeat them as we move forward. And then number five, there is the spiritual self, the way that we relate to nature, how we think about the natural order, our place in the universe. So when we speak about holism in African philosophy, we have to focus on all five dimensions, not just one or two, but every single dimension to fully develop who we are as human beings. And that's what kind of brings us to this place that we call perfect peace. Right? The place where we are able to realize our full potential as human beings. And also to recognize the divine nature of not just ourselves, but everybody who's around us. And the word that is used traditionally to describe this sense of wholeness is mayat. Now, it's a word that comes out of the Nile Valley civilization. And when we think about a translation, it's kind of difficult conceptually. It includes wholeness, but it's also beyond wholeness. It's a state of perfect balance and order and harmony that the entire universe is conceived in. In hieroglyphic writing, the Medinetra, it's depicted as this goddess that has a feather in her hat. And sometimes she'll have her wings spread wide open, and you can see the perfect symmetry in her presence. So it's a divine principle, it's a cosmic principle, but it's also a very practical principle. And I think it's important to know that it's present everywhere. Wholeness is what the entire universe was conceived in. The principle, as above, so below. Anybody heard that before? Thought about it? Yeah, it's a really powerful concept, mirroring right here on Earth our cosmic image that is beyond. So living wholeness means overcoming the ego. Anybody ever had an ego problem? It happens. But when we're able to overcome the ego, we can attain a purity of heart. A purity of heart in such a way that we're able to sublimate anger and resentment, our many anxieties, and boy, do we have them. Things like greed, enviousness and jealousy, ignorance, all of the things that we typically identify as being problematic in the world, it's a symptom that we haven't yet been made whole. And so wholeness is victory over the body. It's victory over our lower selves. A few minutes ago, I read from the instructions of Ptahotep, arguably the oldest book in the world, depending on how you define book. Right? But most historians and anthropologists have identified it as being the oldest book in the world. And Ptahotep himself described himself as a priest of Maat. Right? Well, think about that for a minute. There are many ways that we tend to describe ourselves. Right? I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe themselves as a priest of wholeness. Right? I think they were on something a little different back then, something that we don't see much of today. But what a way to describe yourself, right? A priest of wholeness, a person who lives and embodies wholeness. He was a city administrator and a sage of sorts, and he left a series of instructions to his son about how to live righteously and how to achieve wholeness. And he said, Mayat, or wholeness, is enduring. It is unchallenged since the beginning of time. It is great in its effect. And I always keep that in mind when I start my psychological spring cleaning. And I ask myself a lot of questions. What does it take to bring me back to wholeness? In such a way that I reaffirm my best self in such a way that I see the best in others. How can I reclaim wholeness? How can I apply wholeness? How can I live wholeness? To the first question, how can I reclaim wholeness? How can I preserve wholeness? The first thing that I do is to spend some time with nature. When spring comes, I'm the first person outside. So I like being out there with the birds. And I promise you, I'm not crazy. Right? I do. I like being with the birds. I like feeling the grass, the dirt even. Just that connection with nature teaches me how to exist in harmony. When people come to visit me, inevitably, I get asked two questions. One, why do you have so many books? And second, why are all these ladybugs here? Now, that's because I collect ladybugs to the point of being ridiculous. I have a ladybug everything. Just last week, I was so excited when I went in Walmart and I saw a ladybug Easter basket. I bought it, and it will just sit on the shelf for all eternity, because that's what I do. Right? But there is a story there. I've loved ladybugs since I was a child. My grandmother, who was a farmer, spent a lot of time in her garden, and I would always go out with her, partly because I'm nosy. I wanted to see what she was doing. How is she planning this? And why do I come back 2 weeks later and things are growing? Right? What is this all about? But also, it was a time where she and I could be together just to think and to talk. And she would use that time to teach me so many lessons about life and about how to be whole, how to live. And one of the things that she used to say to me is that you can't create a sense of wholeness. Wholeness came with the universe. And we can't create what was already created. But we can reclaim it. And one day as she was talking to me about a lot of things, this ladybug came and landed right about here on my shoulder. And she pointed to it. And she said, everything that I've been trying to teach you is right there. I was 10. I had no idea what she was talking about. None whatsoever. But it stuck with me. And later on, I really began to think about that. What did she mean by that? And I never got the chance to ask her what that meant before she passed away, but I've thought about it a lot. And when I look at ladybugs, I see perfect symmetry, perfect state of existence. If you look at the spots on a ladybug, they appear somewhat random, but they're actually not. And I studied this, so I was curious, right? Every single spot on a ladybug, if you measure their distance from the center of that bug, you will find that there is not one spot that doesn't have a corresponding equidistant spot on the bug. I think that's fascinating. How perfect is that? Victoria talked about the Tao Te Ching earlier, this concept of yin and yang. Right? Everything has an appositional force in the universe. And I think if we just observe nature, we can see a whole lot of that. So spring for me means observing nature and also adding more things to my ladybug collection. So if you know where I can get any, email me. I'm always looking out for some. Right? But it's humbling, right, to just sit and be a part of nature. It's very humbling to me. To the second question, how can I apply my eye? Once I'm able to reclaim it, what do I do with it? Does wholeness just sit there? Right? Or is there something that has to be done with it? I think it has to be applied. And the way that I practice wholeness is by observing four truths. First one is clarity of vision. There's a concept in ancient Egypt that's referred to as ma'akaru, being true of speech or true of personhood. And it requires that we be able to answer two questions. Who am I, and what is my purpose? To me, those seem like fairly simple questions, until I realized I had been answering them all wrong. Who am I? If somebody asks you that, what do you think our tendencies are? If somebody says, who are you? What do we tend to say?
Say your name.
Say your name, but is that your identity? What else do we tend to say? We may as well hand out our resume. Right?
Relations to others.
Yeah. Who am I at the core of my being? Who am I as a person? That's a much more difficult question to answer. We tend to stick with surface level responses, but it's a really deep question. Who am I? And what is my purpose? Why am I even here on this earth? And so I think about those, not just every spring, though sometimes that's just when I get around to it, right? But on a daily basis, really, I try to figure that out. Who am I? What is my purpose? The second truth that I think through is balance and reciprocity. Making sure that we understand that there is an order to the universe. And trying to figure out how we can help to maintain the balance. Sometimes I do really well with that. At other times, I really struggle with it. We can become overwhelmed with one thing or another. We can lose focus. We can forget that we do have a purpose in life. The third is the principle of truth. Truth has to be at the core of our existence. Wholeness can't be present if we don't live in truth. If we don't have integrity when we interact with each other, if we're not honest with ourselves and with those who are around us. And then fourth, we pursue justice. Justice guaranteeing that no person is mistreated, and that those who need the most help get the most help. It's justice that makes community possible. Without it, we're simply a collective, people who get together from time to time. I might ask about your kids, depends. Right? No real connection, though. Right? We just happen to occupy the same space. But a community is different. A community is intentional. It means that we see our destinies as being tied together. How can I live my life? Outside of just applying a set of principles, how do we ensure that we actually live this truth of wholeness? For me, there has to be a two-part process, right? I live my art through words, and I live my art through deeds or actions. My art, wholeness, is a spoken word. And so many different philosophical and religious systems talk about that, right? The word, the word, the word, and the importance of words. But I make sure that I'm careful what I say. Words can heal us, but words can also destroy us. Anybody ever been hurt by somebody's words? Right? It doesn't feel good. So wholeness and the spoken word, words of healing, words of grace, words that inspire, words that transform. There are no such things as empty words. And I have to constantly remind myself of that because words have energy. I try to speak with compassion. I try to speak from a place of love. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody likes what I have to say. That's not part of the deal. That's all right. But the words that come from my mouth, do they heal or do they hurt? And I think we do well to ask ourselves that question a lot. The second part of that, though, is deeds and actions. And when we're not in control of our actions, we can become imbalanced. We lose that wholeness and we lose that harmony. We have to know when to be assertive, but we also have to know when to back off. We have to know when to be firm, but we also have to know how to be flexible. We have to know when to give, but we also have to know when it's time to receive. So every day that I step out into the world, I ask a question. And that question is, what can I do? What can I do today to make this world just a little bit better? What can I do today to help produce justice? What can I do today to help replace chaos with peace and understanding? And I don't think those are bad questions to ask, but as I grew in my understanding of wholeness, I replaced the word can with the word must. What must I do? Because if I ask, what can I do, then I start focusing on options. All of the things that I could do. But if I ask, what must I do, then I focus on obligations. Not just options, but duties, responsibilities. And when I think about my aunt, a wholeness that can only come from a sense of duty, then I realize that every action has to be purposeful, that I have a responsibility to act in such a way that creates harmony and balance in the world. Now, my ancestors lived by 42 principles of good conduct, basic social principles for maintaining wholeness. And they were simple things, right? Like not lying to each other, not stealing from or cheating each other, controlling anger, not being deceitful. And those principles were later adopted by Hebrews and then revised and edited and took the form of the Ten Commandments, right, in Judeo-Christian thought. But I do believe in moral laws, right? And I found them to be especially helpful in the way that my ancestors conceived of them, because the moral laws were not commandments. They were not handed down to my ancestors as a means of ensuring salvation or a way to avoid punishment, right? Which most people think is the most important part. How do I make sure I don't get in trouble? But instead, the moral laws were self-imposed. They were voluntary limitations on our behavior because we understood that we were part of a cosmic whole and that wholeness takes precedence over our individual wants and desires. I am because we are. And because we are, I am. This sense of connectedness. Right? Think about how this world would be if we all saw each other as a reflection of ourselves. Think about how many problems would simply disappear if I were able to look at you and you were able to look at me and we saw ourselves in each other. Think about what the world would look like if I understood that to harm you is to harm myself. To do wrong to you is to wrong myself. To be inconsiderate to you is to disrespect myself. Our sense of wholeness comes from the connection that we have with each other. And how can we cultivate that on a daily basis? What do you think it would take for us to start to think in that way? I'm open to suggestions. I don't have all of the answers, but I try to figure things out. Maybe somebody can offer one or two. What would it take for us to start to see each other in that way? Any thoughts? Who said something?
Dialogue.
A lot of dialogue, yeah. Talking to each other, trying to reach a place of understanding, yeah.
Curiosity.
Say more about that.
Actually being interested, curious is what people are.
Yeah, yeah. Being genuinely curious about each other, right? Not just listening so that you wait for your time to talk, right? Which I do that sometimes. But yeah, I'm sorry?
Civility.
In what way?
Civility as opposed to trying to tell people what they should think.
Yeah.
Just to be able to have a simple conversation and discourse.
Respect. Remembering that we're all family.
It doesn't matter whether we're kin.
Yeah.
Blood.
We're still all family. We share the same cosmic source. Yeah.
Honesty.
Honesty, that's a big one. Yeah.
Rest.
Yeah. True.
Right, an accountability buddy.
An accountability buddy. Wow. It's a great, yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. I may have to write that. I didn't bring a pen up here. I was going to write that down. I like that. Accountability buddy. That's a good one.
Stepping out of your comfort zone.
But I don't want to. I've always done it this way. We do that. Yeah, that's a good one.
It takes.
Stories. Yeah. Yeah. I like stories a lot. A lot. There is so much power in being able to share your story and your narrative with someone. Yeah. Oh, keep it coming. These are great. I'm getting lots of ideas here.
Yeah. Art.
Good. Are you artistic? Art can be very meaningful. It's a unifier. Yeah. Well, I think about it a lot, and I do try to figure out how we can make that happen and fundamentally change spaces, make them more meaningful, make them more holistic by placing each other at the center. Can be difficult to do. Most of us have very hectic lives. We're always running here and there, trying to do this, that, and the other. But I think we have to take time. We have to take time for each other. So the final thing that I want to say, there's a judgment scene in Metanetra writing, and it's an interesting type of judgment scene. Different from the way we typically think about judgments. But in the judgment scene in Metanetra, Mayad is the principal deity. And everybody has to go into the hall of Mayat to be judged. And the judgment is quite simple. The first thing you have to do is talk about what you've done to reproduce the wholeness that came with the universe. And you'll go through a series of declarations. And the second thing that has to happen in the judgment is that she takes the feather from her head and she puts it on one side of a scale. And on the other side of the scale goes your heart. And your heart must be as light as that feather. And if it's not, it means that you didn't get it. Right? You were out of balance. You weren't ready to take your rightful place as a divinity capable of producing holism. And I've thought about that a lot. It's a powerful metaphor, I think, right? To weigh your heart against that of a feather. Determine from your own lives what you were able to create. Did you leave the world better? Or is your heart going to sink like the Titanic? Right? Holism is so important in the universe. And I think if we just apply some of those principles, we can at least start the process of changing not just our lives, but also the lives of everyone that we encounter. Being whole, operating from a place of balance, reciprocity, truth, justice, respect, honor, and honesty. And if we live in that way, we really can make a difference in this world. Thank you so much for listening to me and my random thoughts about wholeness, but that's just the way my mind works, and I'm okay with that. Thank you.